Today, you're in for a real treat. I'm pleased to introduce to you a man who is a true patriot, a well-respected author, public speaker, and trainer. He's a former U.S. Army Ranger, a paratrooper, and a West Point psychology professor. He has a black belt in Hojutsu and has been inducted into the USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame. For the last 25-plus years, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, director of Grossman on Truth, has been a leading voice to our military and law enforcement men and women across this country and has shared his Bulletproof Mind presentation that provides tools to enable mental resiliency. It is my true honor to introduce today's guest, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman.
Thank you so much, Missy. Just super excited about this episode and just a special friend of mine. And I'll share a little story in a minute about this, but I want to thank the team at Tech Day Innovations and welcome everybody to the Six Pillar Podcast. I want to thank our podcast director, Missy Morris, retired police lieutenant with 28 years experience, and super happy to have her part of this family. So welcome to the Six Pillar Podcast family. It's unfiltered conversations about leadership and organizational wellness. And we always say absent of any buzzwords and BS. And as everybody knows that's been following, that we always start with a Bible verse. And this Bible verse is nothing more fitting than this Bible verse for our special guest, Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. And it comes out of Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpens iron, one person sharpens another. This is such a great lead-in to this conversation we're going to have with Lieutenant Colonel Grossman today. I do have to share one story. It kind of reminds me of the Simon Sinek Styrofoam Cup story. Last year, I was speaking at the Wounded Blue Conference in Las Vegas. I'm in the middle of this, giving my presentation. I look out into the audience, and I see this very familiar face sitting at a table, intently listening to the things I'm saying. And I quickly realized that it was Colonel Grossman. What I realized is that this gentleman was the keynote speaker for the entire event. He came in a day early. He didn't expect special treatment. He wasn't out shaking hands. He wasn't out signing autographs. He wasn't out taking selfies. He was sitting there intently listening to the things I was saying. And it really humbled me and it really just warmed my heart. And then afterwards, when I got off stage, I got an invitation to meet him for dinner. And I sat down with this individual. And what a humble person who has such a tremendous resume in our profession, but so humble and was willing to give advice. And I have to share that because right now, our profession is being plagued by these LinkedIn all-stars, these social media influencers trying to make money and trying to come into this profession. They really need to just sit back and watch what the Colonel is doing. Very humble and bringing his things forward. It reminds me of a quote from my friend Sherry Martin with the FOP. Some people are in this profession to make money. Some people are in this profession to make a living. And some are in it to make a difference. And what Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman is making a difference. So welcome, Colonel. It's great to have you. And thanks so much for being with us.
Just Neil and Dave works real good. And thanks, Missy, for that great intro there. Whoever that guy she's talking about needs to go get a life, you know. But Neil, you give me too much credit. The reason why I was sitting there intently paying attention and taking notes is because your material was just so good. It just had me riveted and drawn in. And then I'll tell the audience, you know, I really did kind of a critique of your methodology. You are the one that was humble, you know, and grateful for the feedback. You know, we just want to get better. We want to do a better job. We want to make a difference. You know, lives are on the line. I think you make a pretty good argument. The very survival of our civilization is on the line. Things are bad. Things are crazy bad. People don't even realize it. And I told you at the time, you have a critical piece of the answer. Your message needs to be heard and needs to get out there. But then some of your listeners will know my stuff, but that I always begin by talking about how desperately bad this situation is. Medical technology is holding down the murder rate. We're fooling ourselves year after year by talking about the number of dead people when the sneaky docs are saving ever more lives. Tourniquets alone have cut the murder rate in half in just the last decade. It's much, much worse than it looks. And then we had the Ferguson effect in 2015 and 2016, an explosion of violence we'd never seen before. And then in 2020, we had the all-time far and away record worst annual increase in homicides we have ever seen. The wheels have come off the bus. Things are coming unglued. You know, last year, the media has reported that, well, you know, last year, the murder rate did go down a little bit in a few cities. Well, it's more complicated than that. You know, we have two crime reports. We have the UCR, the Uniform Crime Report, which is what cops reported to the FBI. And we had the Crime Victim Survey. last year, we had all-time record number of cops shot in the line of duty last year. A year before that was the all-time record number of cops murdered in the line of duty. In spite of body armor, in spite of medical technology, record number of cops shot. And I asked my cops, well, why'd that go down a little bit? And they said, well, we're not getting shot. We don't go to that part of town no more. We know how to not be assassinated, how to not be murdered. We don't go to that part of town no more. That part of town no longer has justice. And they're not reporting murders. And, oh, look, murder is down. Well, what we're reporting is down. But the crime victim survey says it's up. It's way up. This is one of the greatest disparities we've ever seen between what law enforcement is reporting and what the citizens are saying in the crime victim survey. Things are crazy bad, and the wheels are coming off the bus. And then our response so often is pathological. Oh, we're going to work them into the dirt, you know, maximum overtime, you know, with 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. And that's exactly the wrong thing to do. And that's where your stuff comes in. And we got to sustain ourselves for the long haul. And the great challenge, if we keep in the center of the bullseye, preventing suicides, there's so many good things come out from that. And your focal point is just so powerful on that. Your story is so good. That all makes sense, kind of lay a foundation.
It does. And what many people don't know that is the suicide in this profession is outrageous. I mean, the numbers are not being collected properly. They're not being shared properly. It's, you know, we're losing officers at double the rate of suicide than all other line of duty deaths combined. So we're talking about the shootings, you talk about the collisions, you talk about the medicals, but we're losing double the amount of officers to suicide and no one's doing anything about it. And worse, no one's talking about it. So I think those are the things that we need to bring forward. And a lot of it ties back to what we'll talk about a little bit about leadership and what that looks like for this profession. Now, we all know that the policing profession has been going through a challenging season, right? It's tested us physically, emotionally, and spiritually, which I imagine, Dave, it's affected you and the work you do as well. So maybe talk a little bit about how, you know, you talk about resiliency a lot and talk a little bit about how that plays into how you get through some of the challenging seasons that you have. So hopefully some of the listeners can listen to that and take some of those tips for themselves.
And you know, I retired from the Army 26 years ago. I've been on the road for over 26 years now, a couple hundred days a year. I tell everybody, waiting at home for me is my bride of 48 years, my high school sweetheart. She really was. She was 15. I was 17 when I proposed to her. We are from Arkansas, you know. 2 years later, she married a crazy Army paratrooper, had been on this ride with me for 48 years. So I love her more than life itself. But for the last 26 years, we get on one, maybe two nights a week, you know, conjugal visit, clean underwear, back on the road. Because the only people on earth more precious than my bride are my children, my grandchildren. I got a grandson in the Army now, and the blink of an eye, I'll be a great-grandfather. I'm 67 years old, and my primary prayer is I can do this for another 20 years. I believe we got to give 100%. And why do I spend, you know, all this time away from the love of my life, the bride of my youth? You know, because I love my children. I love my grandchildren. I love my nation. I love my God. And that's what love means. Love means the worse it gets, the harder you fight. Men in combat, men, they don't die for a cause. They don't die for orders. They die for each other. The thing that sustains people in combat is their love for each other. In the same way, the things that sustains us in this profession has got to be our love. Nothing else can sustain you. Nothing else can put you in harm's way. You know, Jesus said, greater love is no one than this, that they lay down their life for their friends. So what manner of love is this, that men and women will lay down their life for strangers? What manner of love is this, that men and women will walk out the door every day and put their life on the line for people they never even met? But hear that verse one more time. Greater love is no one than this, that they lay down their life for their friends. But there are many ways to lay down your life. There's many ways to lay down your life. We're not all called to die in some desperate battle, but we are all called to serve. And sometimes the greatest love is not to sacrifice your life, but to live a life of sacrifice. And nothing can sustain us. Nobody's out there doing it for the money. Nobody's out there doing it to get crazy famous. They're doing it because they want to make the world a better place, because they want to spend their lives to contribute to make the world a little bit better place. I heard a guy say, well, they're cops because they like to boss people around. That's just about the stupidest thing I have ever heard. There's nobody that gets, you know, get the finger on a steady basis, that disrespect to mouthing off. You know, the fire guy says, oh, you're blocking the fire act. You need to move that. Oh, okay. The EMS says, hey, you know, you need this. Oh, okay. The cop says, you need to do what? What are you going to do? Going to shoot me? There's nobody who gets more disrespect on a daily basis than cops do. And yet they walk out that door and they do that job. And the truth is the vast, vast majority of our citizens are deeply grateful and deeply, deeply respectful to law enforcement. But this faith dynamic, this love foundation is a new component I've been putting in my classes and why we stay in there. And another component I put in up front, my book on spiritual combat is done real well. And now we got On Spiritual Warfare, the sequel. It's really doing good. We got the Bulletproof Marriage, which is a Christian Book Award finalist. I tell all my cops, I said, this is not about religion. Now, it's good that you open with a verse. And, you know, I've got a checklist. Before I do a podcast, before I do a presentation, I go through my checklist. And it's 2 pages long, you know. And the first thing on the checklist is to pray. And we should lay everything as foundation. The second that checklist is make sure my fly is zipped, you know, because I've been doing this for 26 years, and if you can do anything stupid, I've done it, you know. But that faith foundation, I tell people, it's not about religion. It's this existential question that everybody asks. As first responders, you see terrible things every day. You can't help but ask, how could a loving God permit these things to happen? And you've got this idea about religion. You got this idea about God from Hollywood. I hope you know that anything Hollywood says is wrong and stupid and twisted. And the fact is that if we are not God's puppets, a loving God would not stand over their child and manipulate every minute of every day throughout their lives. You know, God's not a helicopter parent hovering over you for a lifetime. He lets us make our own decisions. You know, you ever heard of, if you love something, let it go. If it comes back, it's yours. Well, if we take mainstream faith across the board, they're all in agreement that that's how much God loves us. Is he lets people make their own decision. That means a lot of people make bad decisions and a lot of bad things happen. You say, God, why don't you do something? He says, I did. I sent you. So that's that foundation that across the board. I tell people that if you have any sense there's a life after this life, then you got to think it's infinitely important. It's one of the most important things in the universe. Whatever your faith foundation is, it revolves around that life after this life. And so ultimately, everybody's going to die. No matter how hard you pray, sooner or later, they're going to die. And ultimately, every nation falls, you know, over my dead body, you know, but ultimately, our son will die, but eternity continues. You know, if you come from a faith perspective at all, keep your eye on the big picture. Don't let the things of this world pull you down. And understand that whatever higher power there is out there, he's put you here to make the world a better place. And that I really found that why we're here, the foundation of love, and that existential question of why would a loving God allow these things to happen? I put them on the front end of my presentation fairly recently. And they seem to be really, really important. And I think they lay a foundation for what you're doing with this podcast.
Well, I appreciate that. It's such great words. And it's funny, I'm not going to date you or myself, but I think I saw you originally back 30 years ago or so, back in Arizona somewhere. But I've seen your presentation and it was so powerful just listening to you. The first person that really was kind of sharing that perspective in our profession, and it was something different. Then, you know, recently I saw some of your new training and you talk a lot more about faith and that being a pillar of resiliency and how does faith fit into that equation now? And I do like the training has shifted over the years. I just have to applaud you that it's so powerful and so impactful. Any listener that has not ever heard Dave speak or has an opportunity to listen to him in person, then please find an opportunity to do so because you'll leave being moved and being changed forever.
I will say the same about your presentation, Dave. That it is head and shoulders above what's out there. It needs to be heard. I'll say the same thing by listening to this, to bring Chief Neil Gang on board and listen to what he has to say. I got a sense of peace. I want to keep doing this for 20 more years, but you know, if God took me home tomorrow, I wouldn't have a thing to complain about. And I know that people like you are picking up the ball or running with it, a younger generation. You don't think of yourself as young, but you are. And all of us hopefully got decades of fight left in us. But one other thing too about staying in the fight, you know, I've been under attack from Antifa and defund the police. We get emails about how they're going to rape my dog and kill my family and burn us down and so on and so forth. We'll talk about how you respond to those kind of things later. But, you know, first off, if we're motivated by love and that gets us out there. But there's another thing too. The only thing in the universe you can control is yourself. You know, Viktor Frankl in a Nazi death camp walked out and did not have PTSD. It's a case study in resiliency. And Viktor Frankl said, I realized the only thing universe these Nazi bastards couldn't control is how I choose to respond. The only thing universe you can control is how you choose to respond. The past is done. Let go of the past. It'll eat you alive. Let it go. That's why faith is one of the pillars of resiliency. Having a higher power to turn things over to is really important. Now, the future is uncertain. What some of the idiots out there are doing, you can't control that. The only thing in the universe you can control is how you choose to respond. And if we quit, the bastards win. The only thing on earth I can control is staying in the fight. And the only way I win is by staying in the fight. If we quit, they win. One of the dynamics ties on with that, then, fighting with people like us, you know, we're sheepdogs, you know, fighting with people like us, it ought to be kind of like wrestling with the pig. Everybody gets dirty, but the pig likes it, you know? So in staying in the fight, that's kind of the first half hour of my presentation, right from the very beginning. Retention is down, recruiting is down. We desperately need every person to be there on the ramparts with courage and honor in this dark and desperate hour.
Yeah, I think you did tie it into something I want to bring up. And there was no reference to pig and police, right? That was just an animal you were choosing there.
No, it's an animal that likes to get in the mud, I guess. So, you know, it makes the analogy work. Yeah.
But you brought up something, and I want to get into that a little bit about this, what I call a false narrative that recruitment and retention is the biggest issue we're facing. So the fact is that recruitment and retention has been an issue for this profession for a long time. What we're starting to see is a real challenge. And for me, it's about leadership and toxic leadership. And I know you're on the road probably, over 300 days a year, and you're meeting different leaders in different organizations, and you get a chance to actually talk to the boots on the ground. And they're not telling you it's about recruitment and retention. It's telling you about how poor the leadership is in their organizations. So can you talk a little bit about that so we can maybe raise awareness to the issue is not recruitment and retention, people. It's about leadership and toxic leadership.
You know, it's amazing how many times people say, I wish the supervisors were here to hear your class. You know, well, a lot of times they are. Like I said, we just had a good chunk of all the sheriffs in the state of California in my class just earlier this week. And they're out there listening, and they're striving to do a better job. All our leaders are. But I think the most important thing is to equip our leaders with knowledge. Our greatest need is knowledge about sleep and sleep deprivation. We're in the middle of a global epidemic of sleep deprivation. The addictive video games, the binge-watching TV shows, the addictive social media. You know, the social media is being sued right now for their impact on children. And apparently they have received patents for making the social media addictive. They have received patents for making the video games addictive. And so we're out there, all of us, maybe a lot of us have, you know, played a video game and suddenly it's 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You got no idea where the last 8 hours went. And it's time to get dressed and go to work. They do that on purpose. And every generation of games is more addictive. And the thing to understand, this is so critical, the number one killer of our cops is suicide. The number one factor in suicide is sleep deprivation. This is huge. Now, you got to understand that if you're sleep deprived, it's like being drunk. 24 hours without sleep is equivalent to blowing 0.10 blood alcohol level above legally drunk. It impairs your judgment. You do stupid stuff. Suicide is the ultimate stupid decision. You make a bad decision, never had a chance to rethink it. So alcohol and suicide have always been related. Alcohol creates impaired judgment. You make a bad decision, never had a chance to rethink it. But the most pervasive form of impaired judgment is sleep deprivation. Sleep deprivation, do an online search for sleep deprivation suicide. Boom, it comes up. I lost a brother and two nephews to suicide. As a West Point psych professor, came up through the ranks, got a chance to teach, and I studied suicide intensely. It wasn't until the last decade I became aware of this overwhelming body of research linking sleep deprivation to suicide. One of the best meta studies of suicide says not only is sleep deprivation a key factor in suicide, it's the most remediable factor. We can't do much about your relationships right now. We can't do much about your finances right now. We can dang it, get you a good night's sleep right now. Now, it's more complex than this. Don't take this out of context. We used to say, take 2 aspirin, call me in the morning. Well, kind of the cliche today might be, and it's more complex, but take an Ambien and call me in the morning. Get that good night's sleep, and then everything goes from there. But we're stealing our cops' sleep. We're killing them by doing that.
Hey, great points. Where are you seeing sleep deprivation as a highlight or a headline anywhere when it comes to policing? Very rarely. It's just starting to now, but it's such a key component. And in fact, in our organization, the Pinole Police Department, we identified this a couple of years ago, and we created something called the Zenden. And we have an opportunity where they can go and there's actually a decompression room, but we also use it as a restorative sleep program. So we wrote policy around it, right? Because you don't want to make it quickly into a baby-making room, right? So you have to have some strict policy around it. But we allow officers that are sleep deprived, because life happens, right? And we're not nocturnal, but, leadership has failed to recognize the need for this. I go around and I talk about this and, I ask, the audience how many officers are out there sleeping on duty. And of course, the boots on the ground will raise their hand. The leadership says, no. Well, any leader out there doesn't think their officers are meeting behind the church or behind the grocery store, taking a couple of minutes of sleep, that they're fooling themselves and they're lying to themselves. So we identified that and we want them to do it safely. So we created that environment called the Zenden in our organization. And I always tell people, we'll share our policy. We work with Lexapol. We have created a policy for that. We'll share it, but we have to identify that that's an issue first, right? And we'd be able to solve that. And here's the other thing that you talked about, the alcohol and suicide correlation. So in law enforcement, there's something called a psychological autopsy. And I don't know if many of listeners know what that is, but we go back after someone dies by suicide and we look at what were the causations of some of those things and were there red flags? Well, they're saying now 80 to 85% of all police suicides have some alcohol abuse or relation to the cause of the suicide. So we have to identify those things, but not just identify, but leaders have to be intentional and do something proactive to change it.
Now, imagine we got alcohol and we have sleep deprivation. They amplify each other. There's these causal, these pathological dynamics. If you combine sleep deprivation with alcohol, what you've done is they're not additive, they're multiplicative. They amplify each other. So this combination of toxic factors of sleep deprivation combined with alcohol, it's so good that you're nailing this. This is so important. This is the major killer of our cops. And the major thing that we can do is start addressing sleep and make sure they've got time for sleep. I've had the honor to do a fair amount of work with the NYPD over the years. They've got a rough environment. They're hurting bad. I was in New York just about 6 months ago working with the postal police. And we had a lot of those postal cops had come from NYPD. They're happy to make the move. It's a much better environment. But several of them said, the one thing that these guys don't do is they don't let us sleep on the job. With this postal, if they catch you sleeping, they terminate you. He said, every precinct at NYPD is a dark, quiet place where you can crash and take a nap. It's something that is not talked about, but it's essential. It's one of the things it's a survival thing that they have done in the midst of all this badness. Well, one chief told me that we have a nap room, a dark, quiet place to crash. He said, if they want to use a lunch hour getting a nap, that's good. But mostly, you got a guy who's working nights. He's got to testify in court. He's got to be in court in 2 hours. No way he could get home, get a good nap, and be in court. But you give him a dark, quiet place to crash, it's solid gold. So this dynamic of the Zenden, the dark, quiet place to crash, this is a life and death issue to give to our cops. We need to understand a few sleep hygiene dynamics. Number one, we are designed to sleep in complete and total darkness. We really need complete darkness. I'm a huge science geek. My favorite website is sciencedaily.com. Major study in the sleep lab, totally dark room, bathroom light is on, and the door is shut. The light coming under the crack of the bathroom door is enough light to stop your body from producing the melatonin that you need. Melatonin is a hormone the body creates to allow us to sleep. And it creates that hormone in the dark. If you're not in the dark, the body can't do that. It was about 2 months ago, I was in Utah. One of my hosts there, a training sergeant, just, I talk about the sleep mask and how terribly important the sleep mask is. There's a mask on Amazon that has 85,000 reviews for a stinking sleep mask. The one right behind us got like 60,000 reviews. And I tell people, you know, find the one. I recommend Amazon's number one sleep mask and try another one. But with that sleep mask on and you're in total darkness. So cop said, okay, and training started, I'm going to try that. And he's tracking his sleep on his fitness tracker, which is a terribly good and important thing to do. If you want a wellness thing for your troops, give them all a fitness tracker and let them start tracking the sleep. He wore the sleep mask. He said, I got 5 hours of quality sleep last night. It's the best I've done forever. I said, dude, theoretically, the next night is what it's going to pay off. That first night with that sleep mask is when your body's building up the melatonin. Theoretically, the second night's when, he said, I got a text message. It's hit 9 hours of solid sleep on that second night. I said, I've never had this. This is one of the most beautiful things. But the sleep mask is what made that possible. So sleep in the darkness, and it's so important to cut off caffeine shortly after lunch. Now, there's a huge link between sleep deprivation and suicide, the far and away major killer of our cops. But right behind suicide, one of the killers of our cops is traffic deaths. And globally, traffic deaths have exploded, and globally, suicides have exploded. Decade after decade, we brought traffic deaths down, airbags, seatbelts, medical technology. Now, worldwide, traffic deaths have exploded. The new factor is this epidemic of sleep deprivation. Tie into there, the head of Netflix said their competitor is sleep. The corporate policy of Netflix is to steal your sleep. They don't care that it's a key factor in suicide. They don't care that it's a key factor in traffic deaths. They just want to sell their product. But the other dynamic, sleep deprivation is a key factor in Alzheimer's and dementia. I really recommend a book called Why We Sleep by Dr. Matthew Walker. And not only has he got all this info, but he also has more info on his website online with the latest research. It's all there. It's all there. The link between sleep deprivation and Alzheimer's should terrify us. But it's not so much the sleep deprivation. It's the lack of deep cycle sleep. And that caffeine is stopping you from getting deep cycle sleep. And the deep cycle sleep, the lack of deep cycle sleep is a key factor in Alzheimer's, and it's a key factor in chronic pain. And that caffeine is stopping you if you're in deep cycle sleep. That tendons and muscles don't fully relax. Caffeine doesn't bother my sleep. Then why are you taking it? That caffeine doesn't make you not sleep. It makes you have bad quality sleep. So cut off caffeine shortly after lunch and guard your sleep, protect your sleep. Sleep deprivation is also a key factor in our current epidemic of overdoses. Fentanyl's an opiate. Fentanyl is killing more people every year than the entire Vietnam War. 70,000 people died from fentanyl every year. About 50,000 died in the whole Vietnam War. We lose an entire Vietnam War every year from fentanyl, and that's not counting Narcan. And how many we'd save by hitting them with Narcan? It'd be much, much worse. Why? You got to ask yourself, why are opiates a drug of choice? What's the new factor? Always think like a detective. Think like a scientist. What's the new factor? Well, sleep deprivation creates chronic pain. And if you don't sleep, then tendons and muscles are never fully relaxed. And if you don't get deep cycles, you get chronic pain. And that's what the caffeine is doing to us. It's stopping us from deep cycle sleep. Two things, just two things right now could rock your world. Now, first, as adults, you need at least 7 hours of sleep a day. But whatever sleep you're getting, let it be quality sleep. Wear that sleep mask, sleep in complete darkness. That sleep mask will do it for you. Make it as dark as you can and combine it with cutting off caffeine shortly after lunch. And we can begin to rock our world right there.
Such great points. Again, the sleep deprivation is huge. I did buy that book and I had that book without getting into the too scientific portion of that. But deep sleep also, there's a process where it actually cleanses your brain as well, which unless you're in deep sleep, that doesn't happen. It's so necessary for our health and our future health when we talk about those things. Here to tie into leadership. You know, leaders go out there and they talk about how their number one resource is their people. You know, and then they don't even have a wellness budget. How intentional are you as a leader to help your people if you don't even have a wellness budget? You know, you have plenty of money to go fund the next widget, right? Your next drone and the next, you know, whatever device you want to buy to make your organization sound innovative and progressive, but you're not even funding wellness programs. I mean, think about that for a moment, right? So we have to be intentional. And how, when our words and our actions as leaders don't match up, it creates distrust. That's why people are leaving your organization, Chief. It's not because of retention recruitment issues. It's because of your actions or lack thereof. So two other points. The Oura Ring is something that I really believe in, Oura Ring. And that really helps because you have a sleep lab right on your finger, right? So you can monitor those things. And the other thing that you mentioned with the lack of caffeine is shutting down the blue light. You know, your computers, your Facebook, and all those things you're doing before you go to sleep, that all keeps you up and also affects your ability to have deep sleep. So we have to put away the laptops. We have to put away your Facebooks, your Candy Crush games, whatever you're playing, put those down before you go to sleep so we can get you a full night's sleep where you're healthy.
Yeah. And remember, if you play a game all night long or binge watch TV shows or social media, and you come to work, it's like showing up work drunk. If somebody came to work drunk, you'd kick his ass. If he shows up work sleep deprived because he played freaking games all night, he takes his ass kicked. That is not acceptable. We need to create a culture. Oh, I played the new game all night long. I didn't get any sleep. That's not funny. It's not acceptable. It's like showing up work drunk. We got to create that culture. But I love what you said. You just put a round in my magazine about creating a wellness budget. That's so vitally important. But as we draw around to these last 10 minutes, I'd like to talk a few minutes about toxic leadership. And you know, the basic part of the body that's not under control, the autonomic nervous system, sympathetic and parasympathetic, is basically fight or flight and feed and breed. And our ability to bring those things under conscious control is what defines us as human beings. Fight or flight, right? Or we all understand this is never an excuse. Yeah, the fight or flight almost kicked in. I punched him out. I couldn't control him. No, we're not buying that. But I think it's so important to understand as leaders, it is never, ever appropriate to lose your temper. Now, that was a time as a young lieutenant colonel 30 years ago when I thought colonels, shout and clap things and shout at people. And I realized that's not right. This is this stereotype that's being created. Nobody respects our temper tantrum. They respect our calm. And what we've got to do is nurture an environment of quiet professionals. The laconic Spartan, the stoic Roman, the inscrutable samurai, the stiff upper lip Brit, and today we talk about the quiet professional. Those are all different ways of saying the same thing, self-control. It's just an act I put on to get their attention. No. We are what we practice to do. If you practice having temper tantrums, when things go to hell, that's what you're going to do. We're all human. If we blow our top, we lose our temper, take a deep breath, forgive yourself, and do a better job the next time. But recognize the fact that it is never, ever appropriate to lose your temper. I am ashamed of some of the things I did with my kids. I get a better job as a grandfather. In the near future, I'll be a great grandfather. Then I'll get a chance to do it even better. One of the most rewarding things, I'm hitting her 67 years old, but I hope I got decades left in front of me. One of the most intensely rewarding things is that I can see that I have become a little bit better person year by year. And the most important part of all is self-control. Nobody respects our temper tantrum. You know, the first biological control we bring under control is bowel and bladder, right? About 2 years old, we learn to stop crapping ourselves. Well, losing your temper is right there with crapping yourself. It's one of those things that is not appropriate. Bring it under conscious control. And just recognizing that there is never, ever an appropriate time to lose your temper. Recognizing that and striving for that. It is the first step in getting rid of toxic leadership. People just have never been told. They think leadership is about screaming at people. Now, the drill sergeant in the military gets in your face and shouts at you. It is a form of stress inoculation intentionally used in that one situation. You think, well, the drill sergeant goes, they're normal, you're out of control. No, they're the last one to do that. Because the drill sergeant knows this is a game that we play in one situation. Completely inappropriate anywhere else. So the first step in confronting toxic leadership is understanding you've got to take care of your people's wellness, and that starts first and foremost with sleep. But the second is controlling yourself and never, ever losing your temper. Now, that's easy to say, It's not all that easy to do. But the first step is striving for that. Now, the tools that we use to control sympathetic nervous system arousal, number one, is a big swig of water. That big swig of water sends a message that says we're safe, and it pulls you from fight or flight to rest and digest. Now, PTSD, you're in a traumatic event, and let's say Arkansas State Trooper, gunfight, bad guy's down, he's alive. And he said a week later, he and his wife are sitting in the bleachers watching their daughter at a swim meet. A starter's pistol went off when he didn't expect it, and boom, heart's pounding, gasping for air, drenched with sweat. His wife thought he's having a heart attack. It's not a heart attack. It's an anxiety attack, panic attack. It is not PTSD. It's normal. What you got to do is separate the memory from the emotions. Imagine if he said, oh, I can never go to another swim meet. I can't go to the range. I hate 4th of July. I can't sound loud noises. I can't go outside. You will literally drive yourself crazy trying to not think about it. You got to separate the memory from the emotion. So one of the tools that we use is when that physiological fight or flight response being kick in, sympathetic nervous kicking in, stop, take a big drink of water, and it sends a powerful message that says, we're safe. We're safe. And you can do the same thing by putting something in your mouth and eating it. You know, Tootsie Roll, some of us remember Kojak, and he had a lollipop in his mouth, you know, and that's calming. You don't have a cigarette in your mouth. It's calming. I mean, the caffeine is counterproductive, but just putting a cigarette in your mouth is like putting your mother's nipple in your mouth. It's calming, and it sends a signal that says we're safe. So these signals, and I tell people, and it's a useful tool. So you're getting a witness statement from a victim of a crime. That individual becomes emotional while they talk about what happened. A, you don't need all that drama, but B, they're moving down the path of mental illness. They're starting to associate the memory with the emotions. So put a bottle of water in front of them. And every time they start to become emotional, they can stop and take a big swig of water. A, you're getting the calm, rational statement they need. B, you send them down the path of mental wellness. From the very beginning, you're teaching them to separate the memory from the emotions. And the same thing is true with ourselves. When we start to become physiological, a friend of mine is one of our nation's leading therapists for federal agents. She debriefs them, puts a bottle of water in front of them. Every time they start to become emotional, take a swig of water. She told me, she said, 6 years of college, 16 years of practice, and that stupid bottle of water is doing more good than anything I've ever done. So just understand that this action of putting something in your mouth, taking that swig of water is calming. It pulls you from fight or flight to rest and digest. I control my body. My body doesn't control me. Controlling your temper is just like controlling your bowel and bladder. It's a definition of you as a human being having control of your body. That toxic leadership revolves around people who think leadership is screaming. Now, you've all had leaders who screamed at you, and you despise them. Don't be that person. Again, nobody respects our temper tantrum. They respect our calm. And so, you know, we get these nasty grams from Antifa, you know, all the evil things that I do to us. I can't control what these idiots do. What's the only thing I can control is how I choose to respond. So I got some candy that I get to have. You know, I get a few boxes at Christmas, a few boxes at my birthday. You know, I get a piece of candy. I look forward to it. You know, so to paraphrase Viktor Frankl, life is a big game. If you lose your temper, you lose the game. You don't lose your temper. You give it away. It's the only thing you can control. The only thing universe you can control is yourself. You don't lose your temper. You give it away. So, you know, you use that Tootsie Roll or that. You can see them saying, you bastard, we tell you how evil you are. And you've got a chocolate covered cherry. So wins now. Remember, life's a big game. You lose your temper, you lose the game. And the first step in confronting toxic leadership is to understand it is never, ever appropriate to scream at people. Nobody respects our temper tantrum. We must nurture that environment of quiet professionals. We bring ourselves under control. We'd be a little bit better people every year. We find ourselves, I find myself screaming at traffic. I say, stop. Take a breath. Take a swig of water. I can't control those idiots are doing. All I can do is control how I respond. And just be a little bit better person as time goes by, a little bit better under control. And get that toxic leadership under control.
Well,
It seems like our readers and myself were taking the church today by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman. And before we close out, we have a few minutes left, Dave. I want to allow you to kind of just share what you're currently working on, what you're going to be doing in the future. Give you an opportunity to share with our listeners, just the work that you're doing right now.
Well, thanks, Neil. We've got a new book out. It's On Spiritual Warfare. Just came out January 1st. Really doing great. But read On Spiritual Combat first. Three books were actually released in the last year. We had our Bulletproof Mind Companion book, which is really kind of a workbook to go with the class. And then we've got On Hunting, which is a book I've been wanting to do for decades. On killing, on combat, on hunting. They're just three parts of the same dynamic. But mostly I'm out in the road. We stopped putting our calendar on our website because Antifa was attacking and protesting, and that's pretty much gone away now. But my website is grossmanontruth.com, grossmanontruth.com. You can contact us. You can say, we want to bring in for training, or when are you going to be training anywhere? I just trained all these sheriffs this week, and they said, are you going to be in California anytime soon? I said, I looked through no, I'm sorry. They bring me out, and then I will be. Because they wanted to have people come and catch my class and see, we want to bring this guy in. But it's all there on the website, grossmanontruth.com. We're always working on it. In the next couple of months, I hope to have a whole bunch of the feedback on the books posted on there that'll be useful. But it's all there, grossmanontruth.com. And I stay in the fight. We're going to keep going. And Neil, you got to keep doing what you're doing, brother. What you do is important. It's really, really good. I told you so at the time. I hung around not because I'm a good guy. Because what you got is so good and people need it. And it's so good to be on this podcast and focus on the single greatest killer of our cops, which is suicide and toxic leadership and sleep. What a beautiful opportunity to touch lives and save lives. So well done, Neil. Well done.
Super blessed to have you on. I have to mention that if you don't know, Dave has a gentleman that works for him. It's just a really dynamic individual. His name is Michael Baldwin. I know Mike for many years working in Arizona together. We're going to bring him on as a future guest. And he has a journey to share with everybody as well. And we look forward to having Mike on. I know he does a great job for you, Dave. I do want to share that, we certainly want people to join our Six Pillar Podcast family by following us on several different platforms. What I'm going to offer now is I went out and bought five of these. I already had my own, but it's the new book by Dave Grossman on spiritual warfare. And the first five followers who email us at thesixpillarpodcast.com, I will send you a book and also a six-pillar pen. And you'll receive this new copy of Lieutenant Girl's new book, and hopefully it will change your life a little bit. When I leave, I always say that one person could change the world, right? Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Dave Grossman. They could change the entire world. Don't think one of you listeners that's listening today can't go back to your organization and change the culture of wellness in your organization, because you can. And don't accept poor leadership. Do not accept toxic leadership. Expect more, demand more. And I'll say until next time, stay safe, healthy, and resilient, and God bless. Thank you so much for having us.
Well done, Neil.
We extend our gratitude to Chief Neil Gang for his leading us through this exploration of wellness and leadership for our extraordinary first responders. This is Missy Morris signing off on behalf of Techni Innovations. Be safe, and we look forward to having you with us again on the Sixth Pillar Monthly Podcast.